Welcome to Reality of the Rose with your host, Natalie Sprink.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 94 of Reality of the Rose. I'm your host, Natalie Sprink. That's where the organization ends on this episode. I'm not sure where this is going to go. Wow, whole new episode we're going to have here. I don't know how to predict it. But before we get way off course, I guess I could say this is like a historical episode. You're my first male guest, Caleb. Oh, why? You are male, right?
Why would you automatically assume my identity?
Sorry.
That didn't take long.
We also have Tim in the background who's also never been on my podcast. Actually, take that back. No offense to Tyler. Tyler's been on my podcast. So you're the second male. Sorry. But you're the first male to do a recap with me.
Oh, fantastic.
Right. Okay. So today, my guest is Caleb Davis.
Senior.
Tim first met Caleb. How many years did you meet Caleb before I met him? Just a year or two? 15 years ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
15 years ago, we met Caleb when he and his wife, Hannah, bought the outfitting business that Tim hunted with in Idaho. And since then, we have become friends, really good friends. We've watched each other's families grow up. Hannah and what's your name? Caleb. Two daughters, Hudson and Ember. Who are, how old's Hudson?
Hudson is
going to be 15.
25.
She's 14.
14, and Ember is?
No, I'm sorry. Hudson's 13, Ember's 10.
Okay. And they are the cutest little girls. Ember's a wrestler. Hudson's a volleyball player. Ember also can kick any little boy's ass who steals her money.
Which is insane because, unfortunately, she's confined to a wheelchair. And I think she's overcome a lot of adversity in her life just with that. You can't compete with a machine.
Tim is the censor.
You can't compete with a machine. If Transformers have taught us anything, you just change split second.
Stop it, Ember. We all know you're not in a wheelchair. See, I told you. What are we even recapping? What show is it that we're recapping? I don't even know. Well, okay, so the reason that you're probably like, why would you have Caleb co-host with you? Why not Hannah? Because, you know, it's a woman. But let me tell you why. What year was that? That Tyler, 2019, when Tyler bear hunted?
Yeah, I believe so.
So 2019, Tyler came out here. Oh, and when I say an outfitting business, I don't mean like
clothing,
like an outfit where you're like a stylist.
Yeah.
You know,
although
you
I look good most of the time, 7 days a week, I'm styling.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah.
And I guess you're not hunting. My listeners might think you're like hunting for like the best sales or the cutest outfits. But no, you're not. And I'm probably going to offend somebody with this too. You have to also at the end maybe tell us, for my listeners who are like not very hunting proficient, why it's okay to hunt.
Okay.
Okay.
I can do that. And right. I'll stop nodding too because people can't see. I'm agreeing here the whole time like, yes, oh yes. With deep head nods and it looks very sincere.
So anyway, Tyler was out here hunting bear with Caleb. And on our way out many days in a row to the baits for the bears, we were discussing many, many topics. And Caleb and I decided at that point, I did not have a podcast at that point. And Caleb and I decided we were going to do a podcast together called Heels and Hounds.
Yep.
And it was, I don't even for sure know what the content was going to be. I believe it's like fashion / hunting because that usually goes together well.
Oh, it does.
It was really, and we talked about it like all the time and we never did it. So I said, screw it. Screw Caleb. I'm just going to start my own podcast and talk about The Bachelor. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just throw him a bone and I'll ask him to be on the podcast.
And I think it's fantastic. I'm no longer offended. I've held that against you for quite some time.
Good. Good. So now bygones can be bygones?
Bygones can be bygones.
Okay. And we picked the best show to recap. It's totally like Caleb. He's watched every season so far.
A true fan. I gather the girls around the TV. It's like back in the 50s when they'd gather around the radio. And we just sit there and we watch. It's amazing.
And I'm sure Ember and Hudson love it. It's really appropriate for it, too.
I hope they can learn how to love.
Yeah.
By watching.
This show can totally teach them the correct method of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love. Yeah.
And first, I really thought this show had blind people on it. So I was a little disappointed at first. But after seeing several seasons of it the last couple weeks,
it is misleading.
It is, yeah. I mean, who says love is blind and you don't have any blind people?
What's the next thing they're going to say? Love is deaf?
Love is crippled. What? Magic legs.
Okay. Beep. Our sensor is like, he's falling off over there.
There's nothing to censor.
All right. Okay. So we just watched episode 5 of Love is Blind. Okay. Overall thoughts? Overall thoughts.
This is definitely a reality series.
And to be fair, I updated Caleb a little bit on, and Tim, on the backstory. because we had to watch a proposal. We had to watch a reveal. We had to watch some conversations. I had to teach him what the pods were. I had to introduce him to the couples. Did I do a good job?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And actually, they caught up very quickly because, like, within 5 minutes, they knew all the character names.
I really feel like you could have showed me the final episode and I would have understood the entire season.
I believe that you would have.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. It's something else, that's for sure. I want to know where the style of dating was when I was dating back in the dickety years. 19 dickety. It's a ways back.
Well, that is a long ways back. Huh. I barely remember that era.
But no, I was shocked. Like, who does this?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
And you asked the question, do they get paid? And I'm not, I know they don't get paid. I know they get a stipend at some point. But
which we've established is a type of penguin earlier, dude, because I didn't know what a stipend was, and that's what I thought it was. So just for the listeners out there, it's not a type of penguin.
No, Caleb. The penguins come at the end of the season.
Yes.
So at the beginning, clearly that's the end.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite couple?
What was the couple that broke up?
Come on. Who was it?
Irina.
Yes.
Was that her name, Irina?
Yes.
And is it Zach?
It is.
Zach and Irina. Favorite couple.
Favorite
couple of the whole series, simply because.
The weirdo and the bitch?
Yeah. I mean, she's something else. And he looks like, I said it while we watched it. I think I was told I couldn't beep say this. He looks like he would skin people in a park. Like, there's a strong chance this guy is a serial killer. I think later on, if you watch the news carefully, you will see him years down the road. He will be caught.
This could push him over the edge.
Maybe it could.
This could, yeah.
Especially if Bliss tells him no.
Oh,
you don't know, I don't know what happens.
I don't know if he could take that kind of rejection. Irina was, I mean, besides being beautiful, she was not beautiful at heart or with her words.
No, she was not a nice woman. But it looks like she's going to stay on, maybe.
Which is, I'm not quite sure how this fits into the whole scheme of things.
Right?
The couples have met, they've fallen in love and broke off into their pods, I think. Maybe that's whale groups. Whales are in pods.
No, the pods is the correct terminology, but they've exited the pods.
They've exited the pods.
They went to Mexico. Now they're just going to the regular old apartments.
Now they're just in apartments. That's right. But so everybody's in their own apartments.
You can call them pods if you want, though.
Yeah, Irina's just tramping around. Looking for lost love. I don't know what she's looking for because nobody seemed to care too much about Irina.
She's looking for Instagram followers.
Yeah.
That's what she's looking for. But so, okay, we had a funny conversation about, so we watched the end of last episode where Kwame and Micah were, what was it? He was trying to get closure.
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 Yes.
He was closing something.
He was trying to close something with the blonde chick.
Micah.
Micah, yeah. Whoa. What we're going to call Micah, whoa. Yeah.
Whoa.
Before she jumped into the pool.
Yeah. Whoa, whoa, this is so neat. Whoa, look at whoa. The fish.
Whoa. Surely if you watch the show, you know what we're talking about.
I would imagine you have to.
Okay.
I bet if she went to church, I bet her favorite biblical character would have been Noah.
Oh, good one. I see what Boom. You did there.
Yeah.
Good one. Works. And Micah was in the Bible as well.
He was, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we watched the end of that. We watched Chelsea walk off pissed off, and we didn't know what was going to happen. And so then we come back on this episode that we recap, and we see them congregating in their hotel room, and what happened? Remind me. I can't remember back that far. It's when he said he was trying to get closure. She's like, no, you just end it. You just end it. You just tell her that you didn't like what she said, and you just end it.
Yeah, she was really worried about what was happening there. Which obviously,
as she should be.
Yeah, she should be, because he's trying to be a player.
laughs a lot.
Yeah, he does, like awkward laughs to hide stuff. Similar to me. And I don't think he didn't laugh in that part.
He didn't?
No, I don't think he laughed that time, did he?
You're right.
She was just in his face telling him he needed to end it, and then he told her he loved her, and it would never happen again, and it didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And that he would just, like, he went over there to get closure, and he just ended it, even though they were just about to make out on the edge.
Right, right. And he kept grabbing her hand, and they were laughing. Yeah. And she said that. She said, but you guys were laughing. And he was like, well, yeah, at the end, we kind of were laughing a little bit.
Except they laughed for, like, 20 minutes after they had the discussion, and then they ate, like, 4 lobsters.
No, that was Zach. That was Zach, the weirdo.
Since he was eye watching everybody in the pool.
And was like, lobster, where's Irina? I don't care. Where's more lobster?
Who's the guy that he likes to talk to?
Paul,
yeah.
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 You gave that prediction.
I did. I mean, he's got eyes for Paul. That's where this show's turning.
It does. Caleb. Caleb pointed out every time they talk to each other, he takes a very seductive stance when they speak, and they get awful close.
Yeah, it's very, very awkward, to say the least. I would punch him if he walked up to me and stanced out like that. I'd be like, you better freaking back up.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so it was very predictable. Kwame and Chelsea worked it out. And like magic, they are just all of a sudden they moved from making up to go into a Mayan, like,
they ritual. Were Mayan, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Mayan ritual.
Yeah. And they sang and blew the flute, and they didn't, but the Mayans did.
And you had a comment about that too.
Yeah. Because they're like, this really brought us together. It was so spiritual. And I said, yeah, so spiritual. Like, they sacrificed thousands of people to their gods. Like, whoo, this ought to bring us close.
And actually, he said that. He said it 1,000% brought us closer.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Because I could see where that would totally, you would just completely bring you closer.
And I think if they wanted the relationship to really be cemented, they would have spilled some blood on that altar.
Well,
just innocent blood. That's what they should have done to be truly Mayan.
That's true. I mean, wonder how that would go over on Netflix.
I'm sure they'll have a show about it soon.
Love is Blind.
Yeah, Love is Bloody. The Zach and Irina story. We'll have that a couple years down the road.
Spin-off.
2020. It's in the next 2020. Except that wasn't Zach and Irina. That was Kwame and Chelsea.
I know, but Zach and Irina were the... Zach's a serial killer.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
That's right. I forgot. He skins people.
How one man interviewed, watched, stalked, left, then re-hunted his prey.
Speaking of hunting.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit more about, well, first of all, you grew up in Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
So did Hannah. Yep. You guys met there. High school?
We met in high school. She didn't like me.
Oh.
Still doesn't.
It was a little different. So for those of you who don't know my wife is Indian, not feather, but dot.
Please.
It was It was an arranged style marriage. And I say this because after I asked her to marry me, I made most of the arrangements for the flowers and the cake and all this stuff. So I call it an arranged marriage. But she is not Indian. It's just hard to tell. She's lighter. Probably from living up north, I think. But yeah, that's where we met. And so we were, I think she was 16, I was 15. And we met in a Blockbuster.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Because I never know if it's true or not.
No, it's true. My best friend was dating her best friend, and they tried to set us up.
No kidding.
Yeah. And she didn't like me. My best friend was in love with her. And that's the truth.
Wait, your best friend was in love with Hannah?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. He broke up with his girlfriend for Hannah, and Hannah was like, no.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so years later, life had gone on, and she'd lived in Africa. She'd moved to Africa for a year or more, and I went to work in Colorado at my first guiding job. And I came back, and I was trying to buy a horse, and I saw a sign. Side of the road said horses for sale, and I went up the driveway, and it just happened to be her house.
Really?
Yeah. And so I was like,
wait, well, how old were you each by then?
I think I was 20. I was 18. No, I would have been, I think I was 19.
I'm sure I heard the story, but I forgot this.
I think I was 19, and I started.
History?
I started riding horses over there, and it was funny. So still, I had the same best friend, and she did, and he was still madly in love with her.
Oh, really?
And so me and him were actually roommates. We worked together, everything like that, and so I'd go over there and I'd ride horses every day. Like she was. This is why this show is so unbelievable to me. Hannah was my best friend for months before I ever asked her out. Like I hung out with her all the time. That's how it was.
Nice.
And when I asked her out and she said yes, I instantly lost my best friend. He didn't talk to me for months after that. Just like, nope, we're freaking not.
Did you tell your best friend you were gonna ask her out?
Nope. I told him after she said yes, several weeks later.
5 years later.
5 years later.
And what did she say?
Obviously, she said yes.
Oh, okay. So she wasn't like, well, I didn't really like you in high school, but all right.
You've grown 6 inches taller and you've put on 4 pounds.
And then how much longer before you get married? Engaged. Engaged.
From
did
the
you do
time?
It in the pod?
Well, we had blind? To have the time where we wore blindfolds for a while or stayed in different rooms to talk. That was just the, yeah.
Ooh, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, I think that's how it's supposed to go.
That's right.
I'm trying to remember, and we'll have to ask Hannah this, but I think from the time I asked her out to the time we got married was like 8 months.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was really short.
Nice.
So, and it was funny because her dad was like, she has to finish school before you ask her to marry her. And I'm like, oh, can I ask her to marry me? And he's like, yeah, but wait a bit. So I waited like 14 minutes. I already had the ring. I mean, it was so I'd heard the old thing that you had to use like so many months of your salary buy the engagement ring. One made like $1,000 a month. I lived in a bunkhouse and they fed you. And so that was the rest of your pay. And so I had $1,000 a month. And so my later on business partner, I ended up borrowing $2,000 from John. So I could go buy the engagement ring, which left me broke and unable to pay anything for like truck insurance or anything. So I just sat at the ranch all the time because I couldn't drive anywhere, which didn't matter because we never had any days off. But so for like 6 months, I had no money because I'd spent all of it on a ring. Aww. And then I gave all of it back to John. And so, yeah.
Again, if you would have just gone on Love Is Blind, they would have bought your ring for you.
Yeah, and we could have ate freaking lobster.
Right, you could have gone to Mexico immediately.
Yeah. And
bad choice, but okay.
Or I could have been a drug mule and I could have gone to Mexico. Either way, paid for.
All right. So tell me, did you go to, does outfitting require any type of schooling?
Unfortunately.
No, it doesn't. Thank heavens. But I did. I went to an outfitter, a guide school is what they call it. Okay. Had I known then what I know now, most outfitters are willing to hire somebody that is just eager and willing to work and learn and be open-minded about it. But I didn't know that. I was from Oklahoma and I wanted to work up in Montana or Idaho.
Did you always know you wanted to do that?
I didn't know what I wanted to do. When I was a senior, I had a full ride to K-State for track.
Really?
And I had zero desire to go to school. And so my mom's like, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I like to hunt. And so I didn't even know what a guide was.
Really?
And my mom found this pamphlet thing at a sports show, and it was for guide school up here. And
when you say up here,
up where? In Idaho, okay. The guide school is in Montana. But it's funny because years later, like I went to the guide school, and the reason I went to the guide school was they guaranteed job placement at the end of the school. And so I go to work. They send me to a place in Colorado. I had two options. I could go to Alaska or Colorado, but they wanted me more immersed in the horse end of business. And so I went there, which it's crazy. It all works out for a reason. I ended up meeting my future business partner. That's where I met John.
Okay.
And then I went back to Oklahoma at the end of the season, and then I met him, and everything changed after that.
Oh, so you went, did that first,
yep.
Then came back. Gotcha.
When I went and was working in Colorado, she was living in Africa.
Okay. So gotcha. Yeah. You did say that, but I didn't put that together. It takes me a minute sometimes, especially when I'm having a glass of wine. So, so then when did you find out about, what was his name?
Craig.
Craig's business.
So we were super skilled about looking into things. And one day I just like, if you've ever been to Oklahoma, you'll understand why I wanted to get out of there so bad. It's flat. It's hot. It sucks.
Tornadoes.
I don't mind the tornadoes. I like storm season, but too many people. And I'm a big people person. I love like packed rooms and lots of people, lots of foreign people. But so we literally Googled outfitters for sale, and this one popped up.
No kidding.
But it was the only place that had physical property for sale. And so the way an outfitting business works is I operate on national forest with a special use permit. So I do not own the area that I operate. I just have a permit to operate there.
Can I interject here?
Yeah.
What I didn't mention at the beginning of this is that Tim and I are currently in Idaho. We're actually recording this in Idaho, which is why Caleb is with here. Us in person. So yeah, just wanted to make that straight. So we are in Idaho right now. That's where Caleb's outfitting business is. That's where Tim met him. That's where this all took place. I don't think it made that clear. So now you've moved to Idaho. You decided to buy the business. Okay.
So we find this place in Idaho. It's got property for sale along with the business. So I call and Craig says, yeah, come up and look at it. So drive up here a month or two later, whenever it was, and we look at the business, make him an offer, and he says no. And I'm like, okay. So I drive home.
Why did he say no?
Because we didn't have enough money.
Oh.
So go home. And in the off season, I used to shoe horses for a living. So I'm shoeing this. I remember where I was at. I was in a
said shoe horses, not shoot horses.
I also shoe horses.
We have one on our wall.
Stop.
I also shoe horses.
Leave. Beep, beep, beep.
But so I would apply steel plates to the bottom of their feet. And so I was doing that, and I was in this big cutting horse barn working, and phone call, and it was Craig Baxter, the owner of the outfit business in Idaho. And I love how I keep looking at the microphone like it's filming me.
He's waving at it.
So this is what I was.
Oh, shit. Okay.
But so he calls and he's like, hey, I don't know if you're still interested. Mind you, this is like 6-8 months later.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I don't know if you're still interested in the business, but I'll sell it to you for your price. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he says, the only catch is you got to be here in a week and a half.
Holy.
And I'm like, all right. Well, mind you, I am 21 years old. I make like $1,500 a month.
Were you married now?
I was married.
Okay.
And I didn't have a pot to piss in or a dime to spend. Like, we had no money. So I thought, oh yeah, I can do this. I'll just find investors. That's going to happen. And it did somehow. So I called John, this guy I met in Colorado who I used to have tons of fun with. Like, he was a really good guy. And I knew he was interested in doing this. So I asked if he wanted to be an investor. And he said, well, I'll be a 50-50 partner, but I want to move up there. And I'm like,
wait, I do want to move up there?
Yeah. He's okay. Like, I want to move up there and run it with you too.
I see.
I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds, I would have said yes to about anything. I mean, he's been like, yeah, let's sell one of your arms. And yeah. Be like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's cool. I'll get a book.
Good deal.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Get a book.
And so that only left me with several hundred thousand to come up with on my own. And so
that's it.
Yeah, that was it. And so I thought, I know a bunch of rich people because of the circles that I run in. that are willing to give out hundreds of thousands of dollars to a kid that has zero life experience or a penny in the bank. And somehow I managed to find someone who is willing to do it.
Wow.
And so my father-in-law, who's a wonderful human, and I mean that, like, if I don't say anything else serious, he's a great guy. Right before I'm getting ready to move up here and I'm selling literally everything I own just to pay for gas to get up here because I had nothing. He goes, I'd like to take you out to dinner. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, free meal. So if he paid for it, and I was hoping he did because I was going to run out if he didn't, and he was going to pay for it anyway. But so he takes me to dinner, and he tells me he doesn't like the whole deal because I made just like – I have no idea why somebody – I mean, it was like 9% interest rate and just ridiculous stuff that nobody that has that kind of money should ever think about investing in. And he said he didn't like it. And I said, well, I don't have a choice. I'll have all the money in my account on, we'll just say, Monday. And it was like a Friday. And he said, well, the money's already in your account. I put it there today. And I'm like, what? And which I'm really glad he did because the first couple of years were really tough. Yeah. And so that's literally one of the only reasons we were able to stay in business.
Oh, that's so sweet. So,
yeah, it was great.
So, and did he have any weird, like, hesitations about his daughter coming up here?
So with... years later, we find out, and he's like, I'm just going to be brutally honest with you. I thought you would fail. He goes, I was completely okay with it. I was willing to spend the money, and I thought you would fail and come home. He's like, and then you guys would live down the road from us, and that's where you would be. I honestly never thought you'd succeed.
Wow. So and he was trying to use reverse psychology on you, and it didn't work. Kind of.
Yeah, sort of. I'm sure lots of people are like, there's no way this guy's going to succeed. I mean, I may look super intelligent, but deep down inside, I'm not.
So what was Hannah's opinion about it? Was she like, yeah, let's do this? Or was she like, eh?
So when I first told her I wanted to be an outfitter, she thought it involved clothing.
Yeah, great.
And she's like, I had no idea what it meant. I thought, you have no fashion sense. Like, why would you do something with
great,
clothing?
Great, honey, I support you. But,
yeah, what are you talking about? No, I think she was just there for the adventure.
You were way ahead of the holy jeans whole trend, though.
Oh, I was. Yeah. But I created them. They rotted off my body.
Right.
And I think that's where heels and hounds came in, because it was fashion mixed with hunting. So each week I have a new outfit. And like many people will pick like a new outfit to feature. So I have a new outfit for the whole week. It's just one pair of clothes that I wear all week long.
He's not lying.
And then at the end of the week, a lot of times I'll reuse the outfit for the next week because there hits a time where you can't wash it because it falls apart. And so you just got to keep going with it. And I actually almost wore a coat over tonight that looked like that, but I was losing too much stuff out of the inside of it. Oh. I didn't want to trash you guys' home.
Sure. So that's kind of you to think of us like that.
But no, she was, and bless her, she had no idea. Like, we moved up here. And we had no freaking clue. And I think we were up here like a month, and she found out she was pregnant with Hudson.
Oh, was it that quick?
Oh, it was that quick.
You guys went to work quickly then.
I think she got pregnant in Oklahoma.
Yeah, sure.
And then we came up here and she found
out. Yeah, on the ride up.
She didn't ride with me.
It's still on the way
up. Yeah, I'm still on the way up here. We had to get gas money, so... But our first year was so brutal.
So Tim, you just to for wait, hang on a second. Let me see where I'm at. Okay, I'm gonna stop for a second. We're gonna like revamp and then we'll come back. Okay. Bye. Shoo. Okay, we're back. All right, so question I had then was wait, where were we at?
Well, you originally asked me how we got or why Craig sold the business.
Oh, yes. Okay. So in between the time when he just changed his mind, why did he change his mind?
So Craig, So Craig had two federal fishing game charges pending against him, and they were going to take his business. The first one, he had shot a small bull with a client, and then they saw a bigger one, and he told the guy for $2,000 he could shoot the other bull, and they would put his wife's tag on him, and somebody told on him, and so they caught him.
Ouch.
And then the next year they sent...
When Caleb is saying bull, he means elk. Yes. Okay.
Angus, actually. There's a small, small pin. A dairy, actually. So you pick a spot and shoot it.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right. So the next year, the Fish and Game Department sent two undercover officers in there, and they set him up on deer and did the same thing again. And he was dumb enough to do the same thing. So they would take his business, which would mean you have, like, these businesses, not like you're getting them for like $40,000. You got hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in them. And so a lot of guys, that's their retirement. It'd be like,
so did he reveal that to you when you, when he,
no, but when we went to sign papers, we have a licensing board, the Outfitter Guides licensing board. And if I'm buying another business, I get a record of all of the previous outfitters convictions.
I see.
Fish and game convictions. And so all of these are laid on the table in front of us. And that's when the truth came out and we found out why he was selling.
So is this when you when he's still around?
Oh, yeah. Oh. We were like sitting in an attorney's office in Idaho Falls when all of it. Plus, we found out about two pending lawsuits against Continental Divide Outfitters, not Craig Baxter. And so we had to pause the signing of the contract for like 5 hours because we were becoming Continental Divide Outfitters.
Oh, man.
And so he had to sign some indemnity clause or whatever, which would have not mattered in the long run. Like if they still wanted to sue Continental Divide Outfitters, that would have been irrelevant. We found out later on. But the people, once we took over, dropped the lawsuit.
Oh, God. So is he walk out the door and was like, sorry, I didn't tell you about that. I mean, like,
he's one of the most dishonest people I've ever been around in my life. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
And so how long did you, did you have to work with him for a certain period of time before?
So the agreement on our contract was he worked with us for 1 year.
Oh.
Didn't have to stay here, but for each season, like he would come and he would show us how to bear hunt or how he bear hunted and where his bait sites were. And then elk season, he would help us set up camp and show us all of his honey holes that he would go hunt elk in. And then so on with lion season and stuff like that. And I think we dissolved that part of the contract after like 2 weeks.
Interesting.
He was more of a liability than anything.
So there was a reason why he wasn't.
Yeah.
So you hunted with him, Tim, for 5 years before Caleb, right?
Four, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and you found the place how?
From a booking agent, because I wanted to kill that, a color face bear. So
okay.
Wanted to kill a bear that was not black. Beep.
Okay.
You can't say
so
that.
I want you to just tell the story you just told, and I'm going to make this podcast be explicit. So we asked him about Craig, and you just go from there.
So we're talking about foul language, and so back history on Craig. Craig was a airborne ranger, Army ranger for like career, he could string together cuss words that you like, I didn't even know that was a word. Like it was very impressive. Like sometimes you're just like, wow, that's amazing. Like, I didn't know that. But
learn something new every day.
But there was zero filter. Like some people, a kid will walk into the room and you'd be like, wow, he was a sailor last minute. And then I never heard him say so much as crap. Like they have a great filter. Craig had zero filter. It didn't matter who was there. So my first experience with it was he's like, I'm going to show you where I take these trail rides. So we go down the road to this place and we saddle up the horses and there's like a mom and a dad and three little kids.
Little, how little?
The youngest was probably like 6 or 7 up to maybe 12 or 13.
Okay.
Like they were young kids. And here's Craig with a Marlboro Red hanging out of his mouth.
Go ahead.
This little girl goes to get a swing up on that cocksucker. I'm just like, holy crap. And the poor little girl's looking at him like, what's a cocksucker? I was just like, this is classy. And I'm smiling at the mom like,
taking notes.
It's all right. Look at her on that cocksucker. Riding shit out of him, mama. So we start out into this pasture. And there's like a number of things. If anybody is around horses, if you've ever ridden near a large, like if you've ever tried to herd cows, it's one thing. They go where you want. Well, if you've ever herded horses, horses want to move as a group. So you get a bunch of horses running, like you can be in for a really good ride and you better have a very well broke horse. So naturally with our clients' safety as like number one priority, we ride through the middle of the herd through a big open field. So we've got all these horses just running wild because the Baxter herd, Craig's last name was Baxter, by the way, for anybody that wants to look him up. great guy. he's a family counselor now, I think. But so the Baxter herd was known far and wide because they were all wild, wild. Like that we bought it. There was horses in there that were 8 years old, had never had a halter on. There was multiple stallions in the herd breeding back mothers and daughters. And it was the most inbred pile of junk ever seen in your life. So all these horses are running wild. And this poor little girl's just holding onto the saddle horn and praying she's not going to, we all are praying we're not going to get killed. As we're going through there, there's a barn off to our right, and this llama comes darting out.
Wait, a llama?
A llama. It's just brown, hasn't been sheared in like 13 years, looks like a bear with a long neck, comes just flying out. And Craig's on this, and Wyatt at the time, so the horse Craig is riding, once again, I'm talking to the microphone with my hands, like everyone can see this.
And looking at it.
So... Craig is on this horse. His name is Wyatt. He was a big paint gelding. At the time, I think Wyatt was only like four. So he's a pretty young horse. And he ended up being my favorite my favorite horse of all time. So llama comes flying out. Most horses are terrified of llamas.
Loved water.
And loved water.
I would just be scared there was a llama around me.
The horse sidesteps. And I mean, just maybe from right to left, it moves like a foot to the left, which is nothing. And Craig gathers up the reins and he whips it across the face. He's like, "You motherfucker!" And he, I'm just like, "Holy crap!" Whips it across the face, and Wyatt rears back and just like, "Nyeow!" And sticks him in the ground like a lawn dart.
Good.
So Craig's right foot is flat on its side, like the ball of his heel is scraping dirt. And the other foot is still on the other side of the saddle, and Wyatt is a tall horse, and you can hear his groin just tearing. Craig's like, and he's writhing around on the ground, holding his crotch, and he's just like over and over, just fuck, rah. And I'm like, I mean, we're all just kind of sitting there on our ponies, like.
Wow. The trail ride hadn't even left the corral.
Yeah, we're not even out of the corral yet.
The little girl goes, "Is that what a cocksucker is?"
Yeah, young lady, that is a cocksucker. So
lesson one of the trip.
So that was, we ended up having to give them their money back because Craig, I had no idea where to go. Yeah, and so we turned around and rode the 40 yards back to where we had just left. And then I drove Craig home and he drowned his sorrows into a 30-pack of Budweiser.
Oh, my Lord. He does sound like a good guy.
He was.
I actually met him. His wife.
Stephanie.
Yeah, that's
yeah
right.
Becky's good.
Becky,
I like
Becky.
Becky. Yeah, Becky, Stephanie.
Right. Okay, so you have your business. You've had it here then for how many years?
Almost 15.
15 years. Yeah. So it just merged. What did you, so did you hang on to a lot? Did Craig have a lot of clients that just stayed? No.
No. He, like I said, he was a stellar human.
Right.
And when we dissolved the part of the contract where we said we didn't need him to stick around, he actually called all of the clients because that was part of, you get this big list of items that you're going to get with the business. One of them is a client list. Also, people that have been previously booked, you're going to take deposits, stuff like that. So Craig hid money. He hid clients that had paid in full so he didn't have to give us money, which all this stuff, like we were so broke. I remember I called the licensing board and told them, they're like, "Well, it looks like you have to get an attorney and take it to court." I'm like, I could pay for an attorney, you know. So we just kind of ate a whole bunch of hunts. But he called as many return clients as he could and told them not to hunt with us. So our first year went from being a completely full season to having almost nobody.
Good night. So you just had to build it up.
I think people took pity on us.
like Tim.
People that came out here, Tim, I think Tim enjoyed the show. He
is
was
that
like,
true too?
I think he was, I mean, we always had fun and I think he thought it was neat to hunt with an autistic person. like, wow, he's got some capabilities. He's sort of functioning. But I don't know. I would like to say there was a lot of luck and a lot of people praying. And
yeah,
we had a lot of people. I was so young. I think some of these old timers, like, so a couple years into it, I bought a second outfitting business by myself. John didn't want anything to do with it. And so we merged them and they helped us out a lot. Mm. Like their end of the deal was above, and they did a far above and beyond what they're supposed to. And they were, they'd been in business for 40 some years. Mm-hmm. Like they knew what they were doing.
Who's and that?
That was Keating's, Earl Keating.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You also had very strong back and extremely weak mind.
100% Oh, I could carry anything in the world. And if you told me to do it, I'd be like, okay. So yeah, I did. I mean, at the time I look back, like then I look back on it, like me and John dissolved our partnership later on and we just, we didn't get along. And I look back on it and when we dissolved it, it was all John's fault. And I look back on it now and I'm like, wow, I was probably a really tough guy to be around. But
well, but you guys were partners for a little while, but we're
a couple years.
Oh, yeah. That's all it was.
Okay. Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah, maybe like 4 or 5 years. Okay. I'm trying to remember. Because I'm trying to think how far. Are the girls 3 years or 4 years apart?
Well, it was for sure like four, at least 4 years. I can judge by the house here.
It, well, yeah. Well, I can. The same up there because we've lived in that house for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we moved in there when we dissolved the partnership. We bought that place. So.
Okay. So let's jump back to Love is Blind for a second. I'll look for another segue whenever we get to it. All right. Like, let's see. We have, I have my notes. Oh, you made a funny comment. We were talking about, imagine that. Kwame and Chelsea had their Mayan date. Mm-hmm. And then she was talking about bringing them closer. And then she was on a lounge chair and she was talking about feeling calmer and lighter. And we decided that looked like kind of like an X-Lax commercial.
It could have been. It was a side view. And it literally, I mean, she had one knee up in the air and she's kind of like on her side looking at you. And she's got her hand up in the air. Like she's holding something, but she's not holding anything. And I'm feeling so much calmer and lighter. And all I could think was, and less bloated now that I've taken my X-Lax.
It would have worked out perfectly.
It would have been perfect.
It would have been. Maybe they'll think, maybe they'll be listening. And
I
they'll
hope
turn
that
into an okay. Then we had Zach. I had that Zach the Weirdo and Irina. Well, this is when they were having their weird conversation when he was trying to like talk serious with her and say that he loves her. And I was like, how do you love her? I don't, first of all, and then she covers her head with a pillow and was like, covers her head with a pillow and says, just keep talking. I'm listening, which is how you like people to listen to.
Oh yeah. Especially in a serious conversation.
Right. If you're just all covered up with a pillow and a blanket, you can't see.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
Could have just held that pillow down a little tighter.
He was too busy staring off into space at nothing.
I think he was too busy measuring how many yards of skin she had on her body.
That could be it too. At this point, he tells her that she's not attracted to him and they should probably just end it. And she's like, I don't really. So convincing.
Oh yeah. No.
Until she really wanted to be with him.
No, stop. Don't break up with
please,
me.
Please.
I'm in love with you.
Just 10 more minutes. I can get me 1,000 more followers. Come on, we can do it. So then we had the weird pool party where the men were all talking about serious topics and the girls were only concerned with their escapades the night before. It's quite humorous, which I said was truly, I'm just saying, a double standard.
It is.
Because can you imagine if the guys were over there being like, oh my God, you would not believe my night last night.
And I'm sure they were all ashamed. I mean, like the cast that they're working with is not exquisite. But they're probably like, did you hit that? Nah. Nah, I didn't, man. Like, I mean, like I thought about it. And then they'd ask homie and he'd be like, ha ha ha, yeah, oh, shit. But...
Which homie is how Chelsea refers to Kwame. She
I
didn't
think.
Call him homie.
I think she did call him homie.
She said homie. We were like, did she just say homie? Then we had Micah come up. And Chelsea likes to act like she's tough with Kwame.
Yeah.
And tell him what he should and shouldn't do. But then when she has her chance and Micah approaches her, wanting to talk to her, and Kwame, first of all, Kwame is over-dramatizing how much he loves Chelsea at this point so that he doesn't make the same mistake twice.
I love you over the moon and back, boo. And then Chelsea, it's Chelsea, right?
Right, it's Chelsea.
Yeah, and she's like, she comes over here, I'll kick her ass. And she turns her head, and you can hear her be like, Nintendo.
And so she gets her chance to kick her ass at Nintendo.
Yeah.
Is Nintendo a thing?
Nintendo? Anymore? I don't know.
I have a couple chat rooms I'm involved in that still have Nintendo.
I don't know. And so Micah comes over to give Chelsea that chance. And she handles it by saying, that is a really cute suit.
Is that a two-piece? Is that bottom piece a skirt? Or is that one piece? That's just neat. And she does the busy talking, like you can tell with somebody that has zero backbone but is willing to talk behind your back.
Right.
Like, you look them in the face and it's just super awkward, like, oh, you look really nice today. And it's like, I thought you said you hated me.
Right. And I thought you were going to kick my ass.
Yeah. No, I didn't say that.
Why would I have said that?
Why would I have said that? I love you so much.
You're so nice to my fiance.
Yeah.
You have so much fun with him.
He needs a quad rub. If you could give him a quad rub, that'd be great.
So then the lightning and the storm saves him. And so much for that. But then they show, this is the scene where Zach and Irina actually break up.
Wait, is Zach the weird guy?
Yeah. Zach is the weirdo.
That was when he was standing there praying to get struck by lightning.
Yeah.
Everybody's running for cover and he's got his arms down to the side like, take me. Don't destroy the resort.
Standing
just
on
take
a piece
me.
Of metal as high as he can get.
He's taking one of the umbrellas and he's holding it up as high as he can possibly get it, just hoping it ends.
Please take me. And it kind of works because then later that night they break up and it was the weirdest scene, because the way they ended their breakup is almost as best friends brushing their teeth together in the bathroom as she humiliates him even more after the breakup. What did she say? Something like, so when did you question it first or something?
He said, I questioned it on like day two or three. And she's like, I questioned it right after I saw you. And he goes, ha ha ha. As he's jamming his electric toothbrush a foot and a half back in his mouth.
Apparently he wasn't using toothpaste either, because it should have been just dripping out of his mouth at that point, you know?
Yeah, who holds their mouth open that wide to brush their teeth?
Nobody does, especially now with electric toothbrush.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just etiquette. So they're broken up, and we end by... we're not done with the podcast yet. Not even close. We could segue somewhere. No, we end by, somewhere in there, we hear someone asking him about Bliss. And so Bliss is the person that he rejected, had a connection with, but rejected to take Irina instead. What a good choice that was. And so now he apparently is, they have contacted Bliss to come back and meet him in Seattle. And that's what our big cliffhanger was.
Yeah.
So speaking of cliffhanger, have you ever had anybody hang off cliffs while you were hunting with them?
Fall off.
Or off of horses, maybe.
I've had them fall off horses. I actually fell off a really big cliff this winter and thought I got hurt really bad. It was pretty neat.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, the back rock pile where Hazel got thrown off of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lost a cat in it and I was climbing around in it. And I had Roy, our new blue tick, who's terrified of rock piles.
Aww.
And I was trying to take him down this face and I was holding him.
It wasn't Nazi?
It was... Nazi's gone to a better place.
Okay, we'll discuss Nazi next.
Nazi
go
has gone to this stop. Different place
stop.
Where
stop.
The rooms are heated by...
Stop! Gas. Stop! Stop. Tell the story about falling off a cliff.
So I'm holding this stinking dog. Now, mind you, Roy is a puppy who weighs like 80-some pounds. He is a big
Holy.
Puppy. And he's terrified, so I've got him by the collar, and he just jumps. And I'm trying to hold on to him because we're like 30 feet up and it's vertical.
Why did he do that?
Just scared. He's just trying to push out away from me.
Aww.
And because I was trying to take him down this seam, which was not a good idea. And I held on to him and I free fell like 15 feet and I hit a ledge and I ripped out a big piece of mahogany brush. And then I free fell probably another 15 feet and landed. I thought I broke my leg.
Holy
and
crap.
So my hunter and the other guide are down below the rock pile and I'm writhing around just like, I thought I tore my leg to pieces.
Oh, broke your neck.
Oh, and Roy's over there like licking me like, are you all right? I didn't mean to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was pretty cool. But
so you didn't break anything?
No. I hobbled out in that night. Like, I laid down on the couch waiting for supper, and I fell asleep, and I got up, and I'm like, oh, frick. I can't put any weight on my leg at all. It was miserable. And I took, I don't know.
85 ibuprofen?
No, I didn't take any ibuprofen at all. I had
sure it was some kind of horse antibiotics.
No, I had one of those. I had one of those anti-inflammatory patches that they gave me when I got smashed by the tree for my back. And so I put that on my ankle. And
what
I,
life are you on by now?
Oh, like 35.
Yeah.
So, but I put that on and I was good to go. But wow. Yeah.
I want you to tell about, well, first of all, yeah. So to explain the little dog thing before. So this was on Tyler's hunt that was our death march.
Yep.
2019. And we were about to go on that involuntarily, not knowing it was death march 2019. But when we were leaving,
one of us knew.
You were calling you were calling your dogs and you said what I thought was Nazi. And I was like, well, I'm not gonna judge, but I mean whatever you wanna name your dogs, I guess. It's not my business.
Just so we're all clear, Natalie has a strong German tie. I don't know why.
Actually, I am 100% German.
I am too. I'm like 50% German. But
and so the whole entire day, I thought that the dog's name was Nazi. And how do we even figure out that? I think I just finally asked you. I was like, are you saying Nazi?
I literally remember where we were.
Were we sitting by that little creek? When
yes,
we
in a steep dry wash. Because I remember you were like, we need to get Tyler water now. And Zach was like, he is the last person here that needs water. He's drank all of our waters today.
Right.
Nobody else has had water because Tyler drank it all. Tyler's just like, just look so shocked, and you start laughing, and then you're like, what is your dog's name? I said, Nutsy. I thought you were yelling Nazi, and then we all had a good laugh.
We did.
And then we called him Nazi for the rest
of
the trip.
Yep.
For the rest of his short life.
Wow. N-U-T-S-Y, right? Is that how you would spell it? Nutsy? Nutsy, not Nazi.
Did you say N-T-S-Y? Nutsy? Nutsy? See, come here, see.
But yeah, how many hours? It was 7 hours, I believe.
We called it the Trail of Tears.
So,
because I watched two 16-year-old boys cry.
Yeah, I was tougher than the two 16-year-old.
No, like I obviously I've always had respect for you, but you hit a new level at the end of that day, because at the end of this run it was a death march.
Yeah,
like it really was. We gained thousands of vertical feet going to these dogs, made a loop, and we get back to the trailhead where Tim is nowhere to be found. He's been at home.
Look, let's explain why we went on it to begin with. So
we were running dogs after bears. So we started this run with this one red bone dog that I have named Annie, who I still have, not to be confused with any other thing that rhymes with Annie. I don't even know what it was. Panty. So we start Annie and she gets out of there. Normally when they hit bear scent, they bark a lot. And one at a time, you'll feed your pack of dogs into them, letting a dog go at a time. And so they trail out. And dogs, they make a lot of noise. They bark like crazy as they run them. Annie didn't bark at all. And so she runs this massive loop and heads way back into Sheep Creek, which is a huge drainage that has no trail through the bottom. And
so we started off on rocks.
Yeah.
Big, big rocks.
Big rocks.
Yep.
And we crossed one very, very flooded creek.
Yeah.
Sheep Creek was cranking.
Yeah.
And made it way up high on the other side. I think it got hot then. I don't think
were following, and Tim went for a while. I was like, I ain't going.
Yeah, Tim.
Well, that's because I have a very affectionate term because of being on many.
Death
and
marches.
I mean, when I say many, so many that you can't count. death marches, chasing dogs after bears, that I knew it was just going to be the ultimate goat fuck.
That was a Craig Baxter term, by
beep.
The way.
Okay.
So yes,
beep.
I said, I'm out. That's when I ate my little lunch in the shade and said.
And you were like, you said, remember you saying to me, like, are you sure?
This.
Yeah, you're going to. I'm like, no, like, this would be good. I'm going to be tough. I'm going to do this.
While
I'm going to do this.
The Nike poster child.
I also has a Nike poster child. I had green, bright green Nike tennis shoes. Not hiking boots, not any kind of boots. Tennis shoes on for this trip. Anyway, go ahead. So first we started with big rock boulders.
Across a giant flood of trail. So as we're hiking up, we start seeing wolf poop in the trail. And it goes from 2 weeks old to that day. Oh, yes. And so I look at my brother. We're both wolf trappers. And I'm like, we're by a wolf den. Like when you find that time of year, you start finding scat that's all those different ages. You're really close to a den. And wolves will kill dogs. You know, think twice about it. That's just what they do. And so then things got like more serious. And it's like, all right, we got to go. So then we're zipping up the mountain. We get way up top and I'm leading this little puppy who is one of my favorite dogs. Her name's Jolene. And at the time, Jolene was like 8 months old, seven, like she was young. And so I got her on a leash. We get way up top and the dogs come rolling under us with the bear and Jolene gets off her collar or her, off her leash. And she has no tracking collar on. And we're in the middle of nowhere, real close to where a den is that we suspect. So we end up hiking out. We do not catch the bear. It kicks our butt. And we hike out. We get most of the dogs called back, all but Jolene.
That's right.
So we walk out.
Well, but wait. Later. So like to describe the hike, I'm using air quotes so you can't see me.
Yeah.
So after we cross all the boulders and then we cross a creek where you had, I don't remember my shoes getting wet though. So
no, we walked on logs.
Okay, the logs. Okay, walked across the logs. Then it was a pretty steep mountainside.
It's like a vertical hillside and just throw tons and tons of blown down trees all over. And that's all it is. Yeah. And it's just straight up and you're just climbing.
Zero trail. Yeah. Right. And it was, so it was me and Tyler and Tyler's buddy, and then you and Australian Dan.
And
who
Zach.
Else? And Zach. That was just, okay, so it was six of us.
Yep.
So we finally make it up, and then we split up for a little bit, and me, Tyler, Stetson, and you, didn't we wait for a while for those guys to go I have a video of just us four sitting somewhere.
Yeah, we did split up so we could, because it's weird how ridges hide noise and we're just trying to figure out where the dogs were or something like that. And so they went to one side of the ridge and we went to the other side and called.
But to like clarify, like we didn't know we were going to go on this hike. So we had limited water.
Oh yeah. No food,
nothing. Didn't know. I mean, I was just following them. I had no idea. Just following them. We were out of water by this time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were all getting
by
pretty
then,
thirsty.
I had all of the above.
Yeah. So then we head down, back down the mountain, which is harder for me than up because I had Nike flimsy tennis
shoes
on.
It's just harder going downhill.
And finally, I think it was after 5 hours, we found a creek that you could actually drink out of.
Yeah.
And we sat there for a while and rested. And then still, the brush and everything that we had to finagle through to get back down the other side.
Oh,
and I mean, it was crazy.
It is crazy.
It was crazy. Oh, wait. Sorry, we had to stop again. Wow, this is going to be a record one. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. So we get out of the woods, or we finished the death march. Tim had waited for us for a while, but got sick of waiting.
Heard an ice cream truck.
Had a truck there, but he just told us he didn't have the keys. The Australian Dan had them, huh?
Yeah.
So he walked. How far was the walk back home?
It's a couple miles.
A couple miles out of Sheep Creek and back to the house on top of the miles that had already.
So, but we were even like, where did he go? He surely didn't walk home.
Yeah.
Surely he didn't do that. And so we just went home hoping, and sure enough, he was there. But, all right. So you lost Jolene. Did you find her?
So the next day, there's a really high ridge at the headwater.
This was probably, 7 p.m. or so?
Yeah.
By the time 7 to 8 p.m.
And mind you, we started this run at daylight.
Yeah, okay.
So next morning at daylight, my brother takes me to this really high peak in the head of Sheep Creek on a road up top. And I was like, well, I'll just hike through Colin because she didn't have a tracking collar. And so I'm hiking through and I get about to the place where we had crossed main Sheep Creek on the logs. So where we walked in and where we walked out on the same logs. Well, the creek is high enough that if you fall in, you're probably not getting out. It's all super blown, like big debris piles everywhere, and the water's just raging. And so I'm like, well, if a puppy got in there, she's toast. Like, there's no way. And so I'm hoping she was smart enough to cross a log or do something like that. Well, so I'm right at this log crossing and I'm yelling Jolene, and a dog goes, and I thought, oh, thank God, there's Jolene. So I get closer and I yell again. Well, it's on the other side of the creek. I'm like, no big deal. That's, she just couldn't figure out a log to cross. So I keep yelling. It just keeps answering me on the other side. So there's no logs right there. So I strip down to my underwear. I wade across through like belly deep, ice cold snow melt, raging water. And I get to the other side. And the first thing I notice is a big game trail, and it is beat to death. It's like solid mud, and there is no hoof tracks on it. It is all padded tracks. And I went, oh, frick, I'm at a wolf den. And I peek up on the bank, and if you've ever had puppies, a wolf den is the same. Like, if you have puppies that run around in your yard, they chew everything. Chew every stick they find. There's puppy poop everywhere. Like, they're just, but everything is chewed for like a foot and a half off the ground. It's the exact same thing at a wolf den. And I found a number of wolf dens over the years. And so I peek over, and that's what it looks like. And I'm like, oh, frick, I'm right at a den. The whole pack's right there. They all fire up. I can't see any of them because the deadfall's so thick right there. And I'm like, and I don't think, oh crap, the wolves are gonna eat me. I think, oh crap, the wolves ate Joel.
No.
And so that's all I was concerned about. So I cross back over and I just zip out of Sheep Creek, and I'm very upset because it was my fault that she was back there to begin with. I'm thinking, I just got this really cool dog killed, and that's, what a way to freaking go get shredded by wolves, you know?
Yeah.
So next morning I get up and I'm outside and I'm watering the garden, and it's like 8 o'clock in the morning, and this ratty old Euro van pulls up, and I'm like, who is this? And this guy gets out and he's got like long dreadlock type hair and board shorts on. And I'm like,
carrying a surfboard.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm like, one of my favorite freaking people in the world, a hippie. I'm like, this is perfect. I'm in the right mood to throttle somebody just because they look like that. So I walk over and I'm like, can I help you? And he's in a heavy Australian accent. He's like, is this Pleasant View Lane? I'm like, yeah. You missing a dog? And I'm like,
did you find it in Australia?
And I'm like, what? And he's like, you missing a little black dog? Red collar? And I'm like, no freaking way. And Jolene staggers out of the back of the van. And he's like, she came in and she had me camped last night. And I'm like, no freaking way. And I went from instant, I'm going to murder this guy. And I looked at him, I said, buddy, you're getting a hug. And he puts his arms out, he's like, bring it in. I gave this hippie guy a hug and got my dog back.
That's such a good story. So, I love that. Oh, and so is Jolene.
No. So Jolene turned out to be a really cool dog. She's one of the best hounds I've ever had. And last spring, we were chasing bears, and she had had a litter of pups the year before. And so all the pups were running with her, and we treat a bear. And we're coming in. None of her puppies at that point, they weren't a year old yet. And we treat this bear, and all the puppies are getting there. So one thing about dogs, like, it's not a natural thing for a dog to look up in the air for what they're hunting, like to locate in a tree. They want to look on the ground like, well, it was running in front of me. That's where it is. They don't tend to want to look up in the top of a tree.
Mm.
And so that's one of the tougher things you have to teach a young. Some dogs do it really natural to follow the scent up the tree, locate what's up there.
Oh, you have and to they're teach
great.
Them that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And other dogs, it's like, all right, you do everything else great, but you can't find something in a tree to save your freaking life.
Mm.
And so one of the ways we teach these dogs is we'll get an animal, a bear or a lion, to jump out of the tree. Well, they make a lot of noise when they come down the trunk. The dogs look up at the noise. They see the animal coming out. They put two and two together. And then they get to chase it and usually watch it run back up a tree. And so you've just taken the animal out of the tree, put it back in another tree, and you're just kind of cementing that in. So I thought, well, this will be perfect. This bear's wanting to come out. All these pups will get to see this bear. So sure enough, bear comes out. Everybody takes off. Jolene takes off after it. And about 15 yards down the hill, and mind you, she's super athletic, super fast dog. She ends up hitting a staub, just a broken branch, and it impales her, and it breaks all of her ribs off of her sternum.
Goodness.
So I don't know this at the time. I've got it on video just by happenstance. There's a video and the dog's running. And she flipped like 6-7 feet through the air. It was crazy. Ugh. Runs another mile and change and retreats. So we hike in. She's just going nuts at this tree, and there's blood everywhere.
Oh.
She's got a hole the size of my fist in her chest. And so we ended up patching her up there, walking 2 miles back to the truck, taking her to the vet. And so it's called, so we get there and we sedate her, and it's just me and the vet. And I'm holding, as soon as we sedate her, we can hear all the air whooshing. It's that's what it sounds, just whoosh, whoosh, blowing out of her chest cavity, which is a pneumothorax, is what that's called.
Are you a doctor too?
Sort of.
Okay.
I can still.
Can you spell that?
In
new word, pneumo. I don't know.
And so the way a chest works is you have to have negative air pressure inside your chest to keep your lungs inflated. And so when you hear people like, oh, he had a sucking chest wound, that'll it tends to collapse your lungs because your lungs just can't, they have to work off negative air. So we can hear that. So we knew that was bad, but both lungs looked like they were inflated. So I held her, all of her basically chest meat apart while the vet tried to wire pulverized ribs back to the sternum.
Oh, my word.
And then we closed her up and stitched her up, and then we put a syringe in her and did a negative air test, and she had good air.
Wow.
And so they gave her the night, and she was great, and went home the next day. And about a week and a half later, she got a bad infection in her chest, or in her heart sac, and we ended up having to put her down.
Aww. And how old was she then?
I think she was like 4.
Goodness sakes.
Yeah, 3 or 4. So she's pretty young.
Well, God bless Jolene. I remember that was like the talk then after we got back from the death march.
Yes.
Yeah. How's Jolene? Did you find Jolene?
Yep.
So she found him camping, basically?
Yes. So she tracked us out, was what she would do. She found our scent and the dog's scent, and she followed it on out.
Wow.
So, which is really cool, because dogs just, like, you could take Joe Blow dog down the road, and it would naturally do that if it lost you in the woods. Like, they'd find you, they'd track you out.
Yeah, their sense of smell is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I still need to hear the story of Tim and the horse.
Same drainage. Sheep creek.
Okay.
Which horse?
Well, the one you like side saddled across the, right? Is that the best one? I don't know. You tell the best story.
That's probably as good as it gets.
The one about jumping across Sheep Creek?
Yeah.
So back in my early days of outfitting.
Yeah. How long ago was this?
It was that
last year.
Oh, this was bear hunting.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the spring.
Uh-huh. Okay.
First bear hunt with Caleb?
No.
No.
How old was Tyler? He was pretty young.
Was he along?
Yeah, he was. No, that was the bear hunt after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the bear hunt after
That's when he cried.
Yes. Yes, it was. Different bear hunt.
Different also bear hunt is when he cried? Okay.
So we're back up in Sheep Creek, and we bait that country because it's massive and it holds really big bears. But the problem is you have to deal with Sheep Creek, which in the spring is always really high water. And which is dangerous. So my bait's on the other side of the high water. So either I have to find a log to cross or ride a horse across. But no sweat, ride the horses across. I do it all the time, which is great. So you rode in on Hannah Mule.
Yeah.
And I'm riding Wyatt.
Wait, what? Rode in on what?
Hannah Mule.
Not his wife.
No. Also a beautiful, intelligent creature.
Okay. There you go. Okay, good.
But so he rides Hannah Mule. This is just broke to death, big, big, stout half-draft Belgian mule. And so she's absolutely massive. So we go in and we wade Sheep Creek, no issues. It's daylight, ride across, tie up, go in, hunt, and we kill this bear. So we come back. We stink like bears.
Ew.
So my horse, Wyatt, did not care that I smelled like a bear. We couldn't hardly get near him. She was like freaked out. And which, because I mean, it's a natural thing. Like, you are a predator, you smell like a predator that's going to kill them, so they don't enjoy it.
Makes sense. Okay.
So I tell Tim, I'm like, just get on Wyatt, I'll deal with Hannah Mule. Mind you, it is pitch freaking black. We're in very high water. So Wyatt is sitting there on the edge of this just roaring stream. I've got a headlight on, and it's just like fog across death water. And
yeah.
Wyatt is dancing. He's just 1 foot up and down, back and forth, will not get in. And Tim's just holding on to the saddle horn. And so finally, I slap Wyatt on the butt as hard as I can. I'm like, get in there. And he was like an Olympic jumping horse. He's like up in the air, like 7 feet.
He reared down. I think his belly went all the way to the ground.
He fell.
He lunged like a cat into the air.
So he lands in the middle of Sheep Creek, which is probably on him. I bet you're, I mean, if you're sitting in Wyatt, was a tall horse. Like, you were still going to be mid-shin deep in water normally. Wyatt falls. Tim falls off Wyatt. And he's like side saddle on him.
The saddle spawn, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, this just went from bad to worse. Not only is the saddle on the side, his bow is, the water's just jamming the ends of the arrows just over and over in this horse's side, just hammering him. I'm like, don't blow up. Don't blow up.
And
like,
he just stood there.
Yeah.
When he came up, he just stood there frozen in the middle, and I'm hanging in the water on the side of him.
And I'm just like, holy freaking crap. Like, Tim should have died. Like, they should have had this terrible accident and gone downstream into a debris pile, and that would have been it. And so I'm like, oh, man. So
I have to call Natalie.
Yeah, Natalie, Tim died. This is sad. Can I have some of his hats?
Come get him.
Yeah, we can't get him out of the water, so... But
we've erected a memorial.
So he just stood there, and I'm hanging on the side in the water, and I just reached around and I slapped him twice on the butt, and he walked right out.
Yeah,
with me hanging on his side.
And meanwhile, I'm like, I'm just gonna freaking wade Sheep Creek because this mule's unrideable. I step in, and mule's like, "Oh, we wading now?" Right next to me. And so I hold on to her saddle horn, and she's like, "Oh, I'll walk with you. I won't outwalk you." And I just hold on, and we just kind of walk across Sheep Creek, and I get to the other side, and she's like, "Cool, we're going back." And I'm like, "You piece of crap." So at least I got to get wet too.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Tim lived to tell.
Yeah, and Sheep Creek always seems to have great stories. There's always good stuff that happens there. I reenacted our death march last year.
Oh, you did?
I'm almost positive it's the same effing bear.
Really?
Yeah. Same place. I actually saw it. Big red boar. Went the exact same loop that Annie did. I mean, like, if you would have had it on a GPS, it would have been the same. And me and my buddy Dustin went all the way back up in there and got the dogs. We left the clients at the truck.
Really?
Yeah.
Wise choice.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to go too much over an hour and a half.
Okay.
So... like on the top of your head, what is like your, I don't know, your best, funniest, just most outrageous, whichever outfitter story that you have about a client? Then doesn't have to be Tim. This can be absolutely anybody.
Man, it usually involves pants pooping. Because those are always just like good, solid stories.
Because you get all kinds, right?
We definitely get all kinds. And most of like, I would say over the years, maybe three or four guys that I would be like, no, they're not welcome back.
Really?
I had two this year that were that way. They were
like, just because they were rude or just not cut out for it?
There's a lot of people that don't come back because they're not cut out for it. Like, but they're great people. Uh-huh. These people were, A, not cut out for it, and they were legitimately some of the worst humans I've ever been around in my life. They were foul. And the one guy at one point, he was so rude, his buddy, who was Venezuelan. His name was Fabrizio. I called him Fabrico all week, which is probably one reason he was a D-bag. But so this was pretty funny, and it's not one of the greatest stories. But so I'm sitting there, and these guys are just like, they've got more money than the one guy sold a shopping mall from camp.
Oh,
like finalized a deal, like nice. In Orlando. So that ought to tell you what the shopping mall went for.
Gotcha.
So like he could buy and sell me many times over, and he proceeded to let me know it on a daily basis.
Oh, great.
He's just one of those guys.
Classy.
Are you going to use the accents and
everything? I will. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So we're sitting there, and I'm trying to make talk with Fabrizio because it's just the middle of the day and we're bored. And so I'm like, like I said, he's from Venezuela.
This is an elk hunt.
Yeah, this is an elk hunt.
Okay.
Which he continued to say, Caleb, I do not see the moose. Where are the moose? We're freaking out now, Fabrizio. So I'm like, so Fabrizio, you got pretty good waterfowl down there in Venezuela? Jess, the biggest in the world. I'm like, what? Biggest waterfowl in the world? And the other guy's name was Ed, and Ed's like,
his name is Ed? Oh.
So Fabrizio was a Venezuelan, and his hunting buddy's name was Ed, who was just this white guy.
Wow, okay.
And so Ed's like... he said waterfowl, not waterfalls, you dumbass. You know, he's like, oh, Jace, we have those too. I'm like, this is fantastic. He's thinking of Angel Falls or what? Jace, we have the biggest in the world. Big ducks.
That's a weird thing to say.
Really, not like we have a bunch of them. We had the biggest.
Oh, shoot. Any other ones?
I do. We had a bunch of Cajuns up at camp one time, and the deal they made us was they wanted to go, they wanted to bring all the food for the week. Like, they're so backstory on it, real quick. The kid that was on the hunt, it was him and his brother and his dad and his grandpa. The youngest of the group, his name was Odom. Odom worked for me. His dad was a client of mine, and he wanted to pay me to have Odom work for me so I could work.
I remember that.
Yeah, and he was a fantastic kid, like one of the better kids you could ever be around.
Yeah.
And so the deal was he would pay me to work this kid for the summer, and I didn't pay the kid anything, which was not right, and because I worked him like a slave and like a legitimate worker. So at the end of the season, I said, all right, Odom, I said, here's the deal. I said, I can either pay you for everything you've done, or you can pick whatever hunt you want, and we'll take you hunting. It's whatever you want to do. And he's like, I want an elk hunt. I want a late season elk hunt. I'm like, all right. It's the coldest elk hunt I've ever done in my life. It was like 20-some below almost every morning. It was ridiculous. But the deal, they said, they're like, all right, we want to bring all Cajun food, and we'll do all the suppers. I'm like, fantastic.
Because cool. Right.
They were really good. His mom was a really good cook. And so it was like gumbo, pastelaya, crawfish etouffee, red beans and rice, like all the good classic Cajun dishes.
Wow.
And if you've ever ate a lot of Cajun food, you know the aftermath. Oh, geez. Like, it's like eating good Mexican food. It's just not good. So first day, I think we'd had red beans and rice the night before. We're way down in the bottom of this hill, and Odom's brother, Colin's like, hey, Caleb, you got a TP? And I'm like, yeah, I got a full roll in the pack. I might need to borrow that in a minute. I'm like, all right, well, we take like two steps. He's like, scratch that. I need it now. I'm like, oh, okay. So I dig through my entire pack. I find a roll that has two squares on it, the tube and a plastic bag I keep it in. And I'm like, just bring back the bag. He's like, nope, I'm going to need it. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, just find a tree. He's like, you guys walk away. I can't walk.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, we turn around and it's not like, oh, I'm going to give him like a polite distance to get away. It's like, turn around, zip. Just, like, if you can imagine getting a handful of mud and throwing it into something, that was what it was. And so I'm dying. Like, the hunt is over at that point. All the elk know we're there because I'm laughing so hard. So we make it like 15 yards away. And a couple minutes later, Colin comes awkwardly walking back, and he's like, hey man, we gotta go back to camp. My drawers are wrecked. Like, you serious? He's like, I didn't get him down in time, dude. I freaking wrecked him. And I'm like, wrecked him? Damn near killed him. So we go back to camp and we're just cutting up, and he's like, yeah, I had to borrow a pair of my dad's underwear. And I'm like, why? This is our first day here. And he's like, well, you told me I didn't need a bunch of extra clothes. And I'm like, yeah, you might want one more than one pair of underwear for 7 days.
Of all things.
You know, like, yeah, I brought three pairs of coveralls, but one pair of underwear. Like, what? Why would you do that? So that night we have the storm roll in, and it's like a whiteout blizzard. Like, it is getting it. And all of a sudden, and we had just got in our sleeping bags, I hear, oh, man. What's going on? And I peek through one of the giant holes in the wall of my tent, and I see this headlight going across the meadow. And that's all you can see. It's snowing that hard. You can just see it illuminated going across the meadow to the outhouse. And he's there for a while. And then I hear him come back into the tent, and the stove door opens, and it's like, and you hear something go in there, and then the chimney's just like, like you're burning paper. He's burning his underwear.
Oh my God.
And so the next day at breakfast, I'm like,
wait, is dad's underwear now?
Yeah. So now this is still day one.
Okay.
And now he has no underwear.
Nice.
And his dad's got the pair he's wearing because he took his dad's extra. They all decided they just needed one.
Two pairs.
John was the only one that brought an extra pair.
Okay.
So, and I got one more story that goes with this whole hunt.
Okay. No, good.
So the next morning, I'm like, hey, Colin, what happened? He's like, dude, freaking thought I had to fart. I crap my pants. And I had to burn my second pair of underwear.
What the
heck? I'm like, yeah. And it's happened on more than, like, we've had quite a few people poop themselves at camp. I don't know why, but they just have. So, same week.
Okay.
We're at camp. And so we're all pretty rummy. We're tired. And telling jokes, and Zach tells this joke. He said, "What's the difference in what's the difference in English to Mexican in or no? In Spanish, what is a hairpiece or a herpes, something like that?" And I can't remember how it goes, but basically in Mexico, like, you wear a herpes on your head and nobody laughs. And the joke was really funny. Not like I told it, so it wasn't a joke, but I'm dying and nobody's laughing. And they're just like sitting awkwardly looking at the floor. And I'm like, wow, normally like you get like a courtesy right. chuckle, but there was Crickets. Nothing. So Triple P, which is Papa Phil, the grandpa. That's what we call him, is Triple P. So Papa Phil leaves, and Colin's like, "Dude, Papa Phil wears a hairpiece." Oh. And I'm like, "No way."
Oh,
and he's like, "Yeah, dude, and we're not allowed to talk about it. I found it one time." He's like, "It's called the Presidential 5000. It's got a tag on the inside." And so he's like, "I was in Meemaw's closet, and I found it, like, on a bust. And I came out with it on." He's like, "And this is the only time my grandma yelled at me and hit me." And she's like, "You put that back in there. You will not talk about this." And I told Dad, I'm like, "Dad, I found a wig in Grandpa's closet." And he like pushes me against the wall. And he's like, "We will not talk about this in our house." And he's like, "This is the only time I was ever scared as a child." I was just like, "Oh, crap." He's like, "So we don't even act like we know." And I'm like, "Oh, man." So the next morning, like, usually I'll make coffee and then I'll go wake the guys up in their tent. So I walk in the tent and I light the lantern. And I'm like, "Hey, guys, time for breakfast." And Papa Phil sits up.
No.
And the Presidential 5000 is held by one piece. And it's off to the side. And I'm just like, ah! And I left the tent. It was the greatest moment I've ever had up there. I was just like, "Oh, man." And when he came to breakfast, it was like sideways, and my guess is because he doesn't have a mirror to put it on at camp. And so all week it would just be like just different positions all the time. And it was amazing. It was, yeah, that has to be one of the better ones.
It's like an off of an Adam Sandler movie.
Oh, frick.
And but you still couldn't talk about it then. You
no, and you just had it. To you just had to be like
oh, that's so good. Okay, well, I, as promised, I wanted you to, on all of a serious note, for those that might be listening, I don't know how many I have, but
thousands,
at this point. Millions. For those who are like, "Oh, you hunt animals, those poor animals, like, you shouldn't do that, that's terrible." Tell me why that is not a terrible thing, and from an outfitter's perspective.
So like most of you probably figured, if you think that's a terrible thing, I'm a bloodthirsty human who just craves the killing.
And that's the end of the podcast.
And I'll carry that on to, if you come out here and protest my hunting, hunt people. No.
Wow, it was so
that took
fast.
A dark turn real fast. No, so all of it's regulated by the state. Game populations, and especially predators, like, people love to look at elk and deer. They're like, "Oh, it's a beautiful thing. I like seeing baby moose and stuff like that." Well, if you don't manage your predators, bears, lions, wolves, whatever, you don't get to see that. And if you don't manage your herds, like, because we manage our predators, ungulate, which is deer and elk and moose and stuff like that, their numbers can get too high and they'll die off of disease or starvation or something like that. And so a lot of this money goes back into conservation and various things like that. And I think that's what we're supposed to say, because I really don't see our money going back into conservation with this fishing game. Hey, it's really
goes
dumb.
Somewhere.
It goes somewhere, but I don't think it's that. But it's supposed to go to things like that. And they do.
okay, Joey.
They also do conservation projects. And so they monitor our herds really close. And we're not just out there like with bears. It's like, "Oh, well, he went and shot boo-boo." No, I didn't. We kill boars. We kill male bears. That's what, and same with lions. We don't kill female lions. We kill toms. And there's a reason for that. So male bears kill cubs. That's what they do. So they will breed a sow when she has cubs. If they find those cubs, they will kill them. And they'll eat both cubs or however many cubs they have. And then they will rebreed. And that is just something that male animals do. Lions are the same way. So actually this winter when I was on Dave's hunt we found where a tom lion had come in and just killed a kitten and ate it. Aww. And so they always say, like, if you have a lot, if you're treating a lot of females and you don't have any kittens, it's because your tom population is too high. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we, by only killing toms, like, we actually keep our lion population really well. Like, we find a lot of cats. Same with bears. We see a ton of bears, tons of sows and cubs. So years ago on a section of, it wasn't Kodiak, but it was another island in Alaska. They were going to do something really similar to that. And they'd been this big protest and no bears being killed. Well, within like 10 years, the bear population had fallen so low on that island that they opened the hunting season again, boar only, because they were killing the offspring off so heavily. Like there was no growth. It just constantly went down and down and down.
Wow.
So we can do stuff that actually helps out nature, even though nature can probably do it on its own.
Sure.
So
good. Well, thank you. Yeah. Do you remember the time you told me the very long detailed story about the wolves and then it ended about them being hatched? Do you remember that too?
I do. Yes.
I do.
About the wolf nest.
Yeah.
And you went for it.
Yeah, I totally did. I was like enthralled. Tyler and I too. We were on the way to him to find.
Well, I remember we were
almost
to Eagle Mountain.
Yes.
Yep.
And you had me convinced that.
And a lot of people don't know, they're like a platypus. A wolf is one of the few animals that will actually nest and lay an egg.
Yeah.
And each member of the pack will take its turns, like a penguin. They'll take turns curling up and sitting on those eggs. It's one of nature's most beautiful examples of parenthood.
At this point, when he was at this point in the story that you're actually hearing right now, I was looking at Tim kind of like, wait, really?
It's spectacular.
Is that true? Is that true? I'm pretty sure that's not true. Is he being for the hardest person to believe, whether you're telling the truth or not, but it was good.
It's because I'm honest so much.
Yeah, that's
almost
true.
To a fault.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it is.
You're such an honest person.
I am.
All right. So we have 1 minute to go. Do you happen to have a favorite Bible verse off the top of your head? And if so, would you share it?
Off the top of my head. Yeah. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Oh, great. Yeah, so Genesis 1:1.
It is. Yeah. And so all these people, like I always said, that you could not be an atheist if you ever walked into the mountains. Because if you think all of this just went boom and happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ride or hike or whatever, and you spend any time out here and see all the detail and the intricacies of all of it, there's no way you can not believe. And I don't care what you think, there's God.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Very well put. All right. Well, thank you. I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of Caleb's stories. So I believe at some point we're going to have to watch another episode of Love is Blind. You hear me there and we have to call and do another.
That'd be fantastic.
Okay. Episode. Yeah. All right. All right,
as long as it's not over like cell phones or something like that.
Okay. Well, tell them bye, Caleb.
Bye, Caleb.